If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, myself, Tommy Dreamer, and Bully Ray, all of us together, do a tribute to one of the greats, WWE Hall of Famer, Rocky Johnson. We share memories, celebrate his life and career, and we also have some tremendous guests, especially Tony Atlas, the man who, with Rocky Johnson, made history in winning the WWF Tag Team Championship. He joins us to share some memories and stories. And also, a couple of months ago, Tommy Dreamer and I sat down with Rocky Johnson. That's right, just a few months ago. And we have a replay of that great interview on today's episode. So, a tribute to one of the greats, Rocky Johnson, today on the Busted Open Podcast. Late yesterday afternoon, the word came down that Rocky Johnson, WWE Hall of Famer, had passed away. So, you're not going to get your typical yelling and screaming from Bully and I today. And, you know, we have Bully, we have Tommy Dreamer, and I'm sure today, Bully, we're going to have a lot of memories and share a lot of moments of one of the greats, Rocky Johnson.
I think the three of us kind of agree that when it comes to death, especially when we lose somebody in the world of pro wrestling, we like to celebrate their life, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. I know I have some Rocky Johnson stories from when I was a child, just like all of us. We probably all have the same exact story of watching Rocky Johnson in the WWF and watching him on Channel 9 at 10 o'clock on Saturday mornings, or on, you know, at midnight on Saturdays, watching Rocky Johnson do all the great things he did in the ring, or tagging with Tony Atlas and winning the championships. Just a fan of his as a child, and then later on in life, you know, especially me and Dreamer getting to meet him. He was always in the locker room back in the day, obviously with his son, The Rock. So, like I said, we'll celebrate his life. And if anybody is listening right now, I know I sent this out on the old Twitter machine. If you knew Rocky Johnson, especially if you worked with him, if you're a veteran of the wrestling business and actually have some Rocky stories, we encourage you to call into the show today and help us celebrate the life of the original Rock, Rocky Johnson.
The Soul Man. He was a pioneer. He broke barriers. When Dave and I did an interview with him, it really, something dawned on me, and I'll get right into a story. Rocky Johnson was the second ever wrestler, actually the third ever wrestler I spoke to. I wanted to be a wrestler so bad. I go out there. I did an audition for Captain Lou Albano. I cut a whole promo, and I asked Captain Lou, because, you know, Bubba, this was 1988, I didn't know how to become a professional wrestler. There was no thing called an internet, and the business was so kept secret. And I cut a promo, and Captain Lou says, "Oh, you're pretty good, and kid." And I just went right to Captain Lou, and I was like, "Hey, Captain Lou, I really want to be a wrestler. I just don't know how." And he goes, "Talk to that guy." And he points, and that's where I see Johnny Rods. And right before, like, now my blood is churning because I'm coming closer to my goal. And laying the entire time on the opposite side of the boxing ring was Rocky Johnson. And then in my head, I'm like, oh, my God, no way. Rocky Johnson's there. I'm going to get advice from him because he's way more over than Johnny Rods was. And that's how your mark mind thinks. And so Rocky Johnson, he's kind of like waking up. He was sleeping on the apron. I walk up to him. I was, you know, very respectful. I said, "Mr. Johnson, I want to, you know, make it in the wrestling business, and I don't know how." And he looked at me and he said, "You'll never make it, kid." And he rolled back over, and, you know, I was like, oh, like, oh my God, why? I was so nice. Why did he say something? So then I went, why did he say that to me? So then I go and I talk to Johnny. Johnny handed me my car, his card, and the rest was history. And then when Dave and I are doing the interview, when he talks about training his son, and he's like, I wasn't easy on him because it was a hard business. And the moment he said that to me, I was just like, wow. Because later on in my training, he was there. He came to a few training sessions with Johnny and Gleason's, and they were friends. And I remember him, like, lock up with me. I locked up with him a couple times. And also, like, he watched, and he's like, don't throw that one-footed drop kick like your trainer. Throw one like me, kid. And he's now helping me. At first, I was just like, well, wait a minute. Well, he was mean to me the first time I met him, but now he's helped me. Number one, it's kind of how the business was and at times is. It is a hard business, and he quickly was teaching me how hard the business is.
It's funny because you say how you met him and he told you you would never make it, and a very old school mentality when it came to breaking into the wrestling business back in the day is veterans would verbally or physically try to drive you away on day one. It was how veterans of the wrestling business protected their business and weeded out the people that they did not think could make it from day one. And it was definitely a learning experience because, Tommy, I'm sure it mentally toughened you up from the very first time you met him. And then when you became a veteran down the line, you were able to appreciate that moment in time so much more.
When he said it, when Dave's interviewing him, he said it about his own son. And he goes, and he left. He couldn't hack it. He went crying to his mama. And then his mama came yelling at me. But he goes, I had to teach him that this business is tough. And this business is tough. I don't have to tell you. I don't have to tell the listeners. You know, you said it the other day. You did what? 3 years straight of 300 days on the road?
6 years.
Okay, even better. But what I'm trying to say is, man, if you did not have children, you did not have a wife, if you had all those things, it would be extra burdens on you of not seeing your kids. I go crazy when I don't see my kids. But that's the ingrained old school mentality that some people still have. Some people don't. But I think that's why it made him a Hall of Famer.
And it was so much rougher on veterans like a Rocky Johnson. You talked about Rocky and what he said to The Rock when he was a kid and he went crying to his mother. When those guys were on the road 300 days a year, they did not have the technology that we had. So calling home was from a payphone or a hotel room, and speaking to your wife and children was that much more difficult. So veterans from the days of Rocky Johnson as compared to the veterans that we are now, so much more hardened. And I will always appreciate their way of thinking when it came to breaking guys into the wrestling business.
And if you think about it, too, he debuted as a wrestler in the mid-60s. So imagine how tough that must have been on the road. And, Tommy, you and I have done shows on the territory system, especially back at that time in the late 60s and into the 70s, even into the 80s. In the territories, they would have only one African-American wrestler in each territory. So imagine how difficult it must have been for Rocky Johnson at that time to even break in to a new territory.
Yes, and I just started reading his book. Thank you, Trenda, who gave it to me. But, I mean, like Dave said, 60s, 70s, straight up racism. You know, he went through segregation. He went through, and he's a guy from Canada, from Nova Scotia, who moves to the States to try to better himself, try to better his life, you know, and then, you know, main eventing, first African-American to win the Southern heavyweight title. I know Alex pulled it up. We just were shocked. We walked in studio And he's wrestling Bruiser Brody, clean pinned Bruiser Brody in Houston, Texas. I couldn't believe it because look at your face.
Honest to goodness.
I don't remember the last time I saw Bruiser Brody lose.
Think about it. Of all the years that I've seen, and I've seen dozens and dozens of Bruiser Brody matches, I can't think of one match where he got pinned clean in the middle of the ring, and that happened against Rocky Johnson.
For the listeners out there, just to paint the picture, when Dreamer just said that Rocky Johnson pinned Bruiser Brody clean in Houston, my eyes just popped out of my head.
Yep.
Because just hearing that anybody got to pin Bruiser Brody clean is a big deal. So, wow, that is one hell of a story.
Yeah, man. And there's going to be a lot more stories like that. I saw him wrestle many times at Madison Square Garden. I can't begin to tell you how many people, you know, how many times I saw him on television. And another great thing, social media. People are tagging me and the station, and it's just, you know, tag us. A guy said, I had four posters on my wall, the Road Warriors, Rocky Johnson, Samantha Fox, and like Quiet Riot. And he goes, those are my four posters that I had on my wall for 8 years of my life. And it's just like, you think about that, and I love stuff like that because I had tons of posters all over my wall, and just keep on sharing them because it's about a celebration of a great, great baby face. Every time I saw him, we always had nice conversations. Man, he was one of the boys always. He was awesome. And I was with him when he ran, when he was helping train guys in OVW, and he was totally one of the boys down there. It was awesome.
He would walk into the locker room during the Attitude Era as if he was working that night. You know, big smile on his face, completely laid back, high-fiving all the guys, talking to you, sit down with us at catering. I mean, he never became like this older veteran that was out of touch. He was always, like just keep saying, one of the boys, very pleasant to talk to, always smiling. I mean, me and Devon got to hang out with him, you know, just the three of us, and talk, and on a personal level, because me and Devon had a great relationship with Rocky, so we were able to talk to his dad, and just always cordial, always nice, always cool. I mean, just like his wife and, you know, Rocky's mom. Just always nice people, nice family. Best thing I could say about them.
Well, Bully, Tommy mentioned the interview that Tommy and I did, and we did that just a few months ago. It aired late September, early October is when we played that interview about his book, and we're going to replay that interview today at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Also, we have some really good guests that are going to share memories and celebrate his career and his life. D'Lo Brown is going to be joining us in just about 15 minutes at the bottom of the hour at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. Also, Tony Atlas is going to join us at 10 a.m. Eastern time. I'm really looking forward to talking to Tony Atlas. Obviously, a lot of our fans probably remember that they became the first African-American World Tag Team Champions in the WWF. Happened on TV. I know for a long time, Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson had a pretty rocky relationship, but they definitely mended the fence. It's going to be great to talk to Tony Atlas.
After more than a year away from the sport, one of USC's biggest stars returns to the octagon.
Surprise, surprise, the king is back.
To scrap it out with one of their fan favorites. The notorious Conor McGregor takes on Donald Cowboy Cerrone at UFC 246. Join SiriusXM Fight Nation this Saturday for full pre-fight coverage beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern, followed by post-fight reaction and analysis starting at 1 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Gosh, one of the greats of all time as well, Tony Atlas, joins us. And Mr. Atlas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always, thank you all for thinking about the old grandpa.
And I know it must have been a heavy heart when you heard the news yesterday that Rocky Johnson had passed.
Man, it broke my heart. I talked to Rocky about 4 days ago. His wife, Sheila, called me because we was talking about what we're going to do WrestleMania weekend with some guy that wanted to book the both of us, and then I was supposed to see him on the show up in Albany. So we were just talking on the phone. I asked Sheila, I said, Rocky don't sound good. Is he okay? She said, no, he's not doing well right now. So I said, Rocky, you okay? He said, yeah, I'm going to be all right, brother. I'm going to be all right. And then we talked for about maybe 10 minutes or so, and You know, I said, I love you, brothers. I love you too, man. We were really looking forward to, you know, seeing each other, because our tag team was kind of like, it happened, and we were both happy about it, but, and Dreamer know this, because, you know, Dreamer know wrestling, and, you know, and much about it as Mark Henry. You know, he's a very intelligent young man. But they would put Rocky in one town and have me in another town after we won the belt. So we really never had an opportunity to really, you know, take it as far as we could have took it. And it was very, very sad that Rocky never got that second chance to show the world. See, Rocky was a very proud man, and Rocky always wanted, you know, I didn't understand a lot of stuff when I was young, and Rocky was the type of guy, he wanted equality. Rocky couldn't understand why he was the main event, and one guy is getting $1,500 for the match, and he's getting $500. He couldn't understand that. Thunderbolt Patterson couldn't understand that. Rocky couldn't understand why, you know, he was built the way he built and looked the way he looked, and he didn't get the same opportunity. So he always wanted equality. Like, you know, when I first started the business, back in the early 70s, they used to tell a lot of racial jokes. You know, there was jokes about if you was a Polish, they may have Polish jokes. And if you was black, they had black jokes. And, you know, the only person, believe it or not, that nobody made jokes about was Mr. Fuji. Because Fuji would get you.
He would rip you.
So you didn't joke about Mr. Fuji. So he would get you. So
he would throw salt into your eyes.
Huh?
He would throw salt into your eyes if you did.
No, he would do more than that. Trust me. Yes, yes, Dreamer. Dreamer knows some of the stories.
Yes, sir.
You know, there's some guys still around that remember Fuji. No, he put feces in your shoes if you have to, you know. Yeah. He would take some grazing glue and glue your testicles to your thigh. No, you didn't want to mess with Fuji. No, you didn't want to mess with Fuji. Trust me. He would take roadkill and give it to you as a barbecue. Ask Dreamer about that story. He gave guys a roadkill one time. Oh, man. He messed with Morocco. Yeah, you mess. But anyway, getting back to Rocket, you know, somebody told a black joke. Rocket get mad about it. I laughed it off. Oh, George Scott taught me how to deal with it. Every time they told me a black joke, I told them one. And sometimes I do it to the guys now. I would go in and I would tell a black joke to some. I would tell one to Dreamer. Dreamer is looking at me like, what the hell is that all about? You know? He'd tell you. But anyway, I'm going to miss Rocky. You know, he's a man that had a lot of pride. You know, he carried himself in a very dignified way. And all things Rocky ever wanted in his whole life was be respected as a wrestler, as his counterpart was respected. But, you know, he was from Canada, and, you know, he's a very proud man. You know, you see the way he walked, he always held his chest up, always kept himself in good shape. You know, he was a great father to his kids. You know, among black people, 75% of black kids grow up without a father. Rocky Johnson was there for his kids, you know, in all of his relationships. So, you know, he was a guy, a great guy, in my opinion. Me and him, we had our differences along the way, but there was a lot of people I had problems with, you know. But me and Rocky, we was able to mend our differences, and we became the best of friends. You know, he called me, him and his wife, every Christmas. About a couple of years back, I fell on some hard time and couldn't pay my mortgage. And when Rocky's wife heard about it, she called my wife because they didn't want to let me know. And I had to take my wife to the Western Union. I said, what are you going to the Western Union for? She said, Rocky Johnson sent us the money for the mortgage.
Wow. That's awesome.
That was Rocky.
Hey, Tony, yeah. It's Tommy Dreamer. How are you, sir?
Hey, Tommy. How you doing, my friend?
I'm okay. You were the one who helped me out, the first veteran to really ever help me. And always indebted to you for that. And you taught me a lot. You had told me, because you know, when you're first a fan and then you come in this business, and then you taught me a lot about the past and dealing with racism, as well as being an African American in a territory. You would say that was a gimmick. They only would have one.
Yeah.
They would have an Indian, a cowboy.
That's right.
And when you explained that to me, it opened up my eyes just to like how really the business was run. And like you and Rocky, besides being, you were always in opposite places except for when you guys tagged up. Did you realize the significance? I was with you when Obama became president. Did you realize the significance of what you and Rocky did, or was just another gimmick for you, just another match for you when you guys won the title?
I think it's a little bit of both, Tommy, because you know we understood it, but we were just shocked that they didn't do nothing with it. That's the part that really
right
did it. And not with just me and Rocky. I saw him doing with Ron Summers too. I mean, I was in WCW when Ron Summers got the belt, and you know, Snain was still, you know, the man. You know, they never really. They brought me in to work against him, and they wanted to work an angle, but then they had me to job out to everybody but the referee before they gave me the Summers. They would beat the guy up with everybody, and then they give him the Summers out there. Everybody don't beat this person but the referee. That's the only guy they beat first. Okay, Ron, you can have him now. And then Rocky, you know, it was shameful, and it was things that they did, and I was not a complete angel. I mean, I had some demons in my life when I was young. That I'm not proud of, but you know, I don't lie about nothing. I take responsibility for things that I did. I was not the brightest guy in the world. I got involved a lot with drugs, and a couple of times Rocky just didn't want to travel with me if I had anything on me. Rocky was the type of guy, you know, he liked his whiskey and everything, but he was always afraid of me taking his. He losing his spot there, because me and him was both considered top guys. But so Rocky figured that if I did anything wrong, like Vince Senior told Rocky, like he told SD, take care of Tony. So you know, if I came to that car and I was stolen, Rocky scared to death. Most of the time he pull off. We not used to get mad at him for, but
right.
Now that I look back on it, I think I would have pulled off too. Because he understood the significance of having a job during that time with the WWF. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, he tried to help with. I would have quit the business way back in, I don't know if many people know this story, but I was in Florida, and they was doing me so bad in Florida and calling me names and you know. They called me, Tommy, I hate to say that, they called me nigger so many times down there. That when somebody say Tony, I didn't answer. I didn't know who the hell they were talking to. And so I got so pissed off about it. And I told Rocket, I said, man, screw this. I said, I don't need this. I'm going back to Virginia. Rocket said, man, don't you quit. He said, if you quit, I kick your ass. He said, you got a lot of talent. He said, you could go a long ways in this business, kid. He said, it would really hurt me if you quit the business. And that was back in the early 70s. So I was about ready to check out back in 75, 76. Then Rocky talked me out of it, and I never forgot that. He always reminded me, you know, that I should stay in the business. And he was right. I did do as well as I could have done, but I did pretty decent because of Rocky Johnson. So I have respect for him. That's why when we got to WWF and they didn't put us together, if Rocky was in one town, the guys would be going up to Rocky telling Rocky stuff that I said that I didn't say, and then they would be coming telling me stuff that Rocky said that Rocky didn't say. That he was always trying to pit us against each other. Then when we did tag up, it was mostly in six-mans or something of this nature. Even SD was saying, he said, how come y'all made you guys a tag team, but they won't team you up? That's why it's very hard to find matches of me and Rocky Johnson as a tag team. Think about it.
You know, I think I was having this conversation with Tom.
We were trying to find matches of me and him together. You go find a match where we won the belt, the one y'all just got through seeing, and when we lost the belt. And then you may find a match of when we took in a wrestler against me, Andre the Giant, and Rocky Johnson. We teamed up a couple of times. But there's very few matches of me and Rocky Johnson together.
Wow.
with them belts. Think about it. They never team us up much. It was, you know, and that got under, and what made Rocky Lee from the, I stayed, you know, I was trying to make amends. I stayed, and they had, me and Rocky had to put somebody over, and Rocky walked back to the dressing room there. He walked up to Vince, because he was a man. Rocky would tell you to your face what he thought. He didn't talk behind your back. He walked right up to you and talked to you. He said, Vince, I'm not going to let you job me out and make a jobber out of me like you did S.D. Jones. And he left. And if you stop and think about it, after Rocky, we lost the title, they never brought him back for anything. Maybe a little skit here, a little skit there. They brought him back in 97 when his son was there. But that was about it. They never booked Rocky again, never used him again. Because he was a type of very proud black man. And during that period of time, we are not supposed to speak up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's why Muhammad Ali became a heel. Because people didn't used to know black guy coming out there talking all that stuff. He drove these people crazy, man, Muhammad Ali. They wanted him to be more like Joe Rudd. Joe Rudd would come in, thank you so very much. It is so glad to be here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Ali come out like, I flew like a butterfly, stayed like a bee. Nobody in this whole world is greater than me. What the world? And became a heel from doing that. Because black people in Florida had no voice back then. And it took a while for the business to come around to where it is now, because that's just how the business was. And if they had two blacks, that's why me and SD got along so well. Because SD knew that they was going to never put him in my place. He knew that. So it was easy for us to get along. But when I was around a guy like Tagger Conway Jr., Tagger was scared to death when I came to Texas. When I was in, I told Dreamer D story, when I was in Georgia with Thunderbolt Patterson, you know, me and him, we liked each other, but Thunderbolt knew that I got to go or he got to go. One of us going to become a jobber. They wasn't going to keep two blacks on top. They wasn't going to do that. Same thing with if you was oriented, they wasn't going to. Mr. Fuji, he did more stuff to Toru Tanaka than you could shake a stick at. He did stuff to Saito. He did a lot of stuff trying to get Saito fired when they were tag team partners. Chief Dave Strombo, you ask Jiro how Chief did it. How did Chief stay there so long?
Right.
You know, Chief could barely climb into the ring. Look at Wahoo McDaniel, never set foot up there hollering. And he was about the baddest dude I ever met in my life, Wahoo. But with Chief Dave Strombo, he'd do anything he can to keep any Indian. If you was Indian and you go to a territory and a top Indian there, they're going to do everything they power to keep your butt away from there.
Tony, you're still teaching right now. I love it.
The only guy that was on top that would not let people do that, believe it or not, was Bruno Sammartino. Bruno didn't care about another Italian being there. He would get mad at you if you found out that you kept this guy back because he was Italian. Bruno was about, when I say Bruno, Harley Race, guys like that, Nick Buckwheeler, these guys were true gentlemen. I mean, they stood up. The one of the greatest heroes to black people in this business, people barely know his name. His name was Sputnik Monroe. You ask Jimmy Hart about Sputnik Monroe. In Tennessee, they had what they called the Crow Nest. The Crow Nest was where black people sat up in the upper back, the top row, you know, up in the top there. What we know as the cheap seats. So Sputnik told Jerry Lawler, said, look, black people pay their money to see us perform just like white people. They should be allowed to sit down on the floor with everybody else. Sputnik done that. Sputnik was the first guy to try to get a union. And, you know, Moolah started with Sputnik. She was a slave girl or something like that. She was Sputnik Monroe manager for a while, way back in the day. But you look up this guy. He was part of the guy that fought more for black people. Another guy that fought a lot for black people in this business that don't get no credit for it, believe it or not, is Cowboy Bill Watts. Bill Watts made Ernie Ladd the first black booker, and I think the only one. So unless you know somebody else out there, I never met. And he made Ron Simmons the first black champion. So, you know, we have people that fought with us on this issue. My problem, on the other hand, is pretty much my own, how would I want to put it? My own creation, my own doing, you know. Because they have big plans for me, but I just, that's why I call my book Too Much Too Soon. I couldn't handle all that coming at me at once.
Right, but you know, Tony, you like you said, you're young and you learn, and you know, I still you're teaching us now, and you're still a teacher. You helped me out more than most when you didn't have to, and just like how Rocky Johnson helped you out, which is it's called paying it forward. And I love you to death, and man, you just schooled us again. We were sitting at the edge of our seats listening to this. Thank you.
Well, I've been around. I'm as old as dirt, Tommy. And I still got bigger arms.
You got bigger arms than everybody still. I know. That's all I got. How's your wife feeling? Is she like doing
that.
Okay?
Well, you know, I like that, Jim. That was one thing that me and Rocky was really into is, you know, that, I stay in the gym because I love it, but another reason is because we always, in old times, we didn't want to disappoint our fans. That's why Ivan Putski and a lot of these guys, like the Mighty Igor, he went for a whole year without speaking English because, you know, because he didn't want to kill the gimmick. Mr. Wrestling, too. I got seen a picture of him in the White House putting Jimmy Carter in a headlock with his mask on.
You couldn't get away with that today.
Yeah, not today. No. He can't do that. But he would wear that mask. Neil Mascara, I wrestled with this guy doing from years. Don't know what he looked like. He would go in the shower with a mask on.
Tony, I got to ask you one last question. I'm going to go old school. Who had a better bench, you or Rocky Johnson?
I don't want to blow my own horn, but there was only three people in the world that could out bench press me. So I did it in competition. So
no, I know.
I still hold the main bench press record up here in Maine. If you look it up, at 575, and then in the world competition, I did 650, and that was with a pause, without a shirt, raw. I used to walk into the ring cold and do 500. Just to entertain the people.
I seen it.
I had a thing that called, I do five for five. So I would go in the gym, and I take 500 pounds, and I do five sets of five with it. Oof. So the bench, I had to say that, you know, Rocky couldn't mess with that. I mean, Rocky had a good bench. He did like 405, 425. I don't think he ever did 500. But you know who else used to do? Now, this is the strangest guy I've ever worked out with, S.D. Jones. S.D. had a bench press about 315 bench press. But S.D. had an incline press of 455.
I worked out with him in Metro Fit and Pelham all the time. He was strong as strong can be.
That was a strong boy. Nobody understood how strong S.D. was. He was a freaking brute. I was doing curls one day with 225. Steve reached down there and started doing curls with it. He used to train with me, you know, just before me and Rocky. But SD was a freaking brute. He was a brute. I mean, he didn't have the bodybuilder look or nothing, but he was a powerful, powerful guy. Another strong guy people never realized was Dick Murdoch. He never worked out. And we did a thing in Japan. Murdoch did 365. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
365 pounds. The guy don't even work out. Strong as hell. But nobody was stronger than Andre the Giant. Nobody. I mean, it just is liquid. Well, you know, it's the ligmas. And I see him pick up things and throw people like, you know, he stepped on your foot just like a car ran over it. And that was no fun when you hit you in the stomach with that butt. It felt like a car being backed into you. It really do, man. I mean, that butt was, I mean, when you look at it, like he's barely doing anything. But you take like 600 pounds, a butt hits you.
Well, Tony.
You're going to feel it.
Tony, we got to go to a commercial break. We got to have you on again.
Hey, we got to talk about the when he schooled Paul Orndorff with the pose down on TNT.
Well, we got to, Tony, thank you for sharing your memories with Rocky Johnson.
And we'll talk to you. And please, y'all all remember Rocky Johnson as one of the greatest guys. You know, he broke the barriers. You know, grew up rough neighborhood where he come from in Canada. Made it to the Hall of Fame, made it to being a world champion. He worked his ass off. He never hurt anybody. Rocket never hurt anybody. He took care of his kids. You know, 75% of black kids grew up without a father. Rocket, within that 25%, he raised his kids. He was a good guy, and I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him a lot.
Thank you, Tony, and I love you. Thank you for everything.
Hey, I will talk to you. All right, y'all stay strong, man.
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
Tommy and I just sat down with Rocky Johnson a few months ago to talk about his career and his new book, and we're going to replay that interview right now. And the first question that we asked was how his wrestling story started.
I started wrestling when I was born. I was born in Amherst, Nova Scotia, Canada, and I started boxing there, and I left at 15 and went up to Toronto, Canada, and I went and joined Jack Wentz Wrestling School in Hamilton, Toronto. But the story is there, I was at the Trinity Recreation Center working out, and I was boxing, and it was a big snowstorm, and I was the only fighter that showed up, and it was a guy named Boley, and he was wrestling, and he had nobody to work out with. So I said, hey, kid, come on in now, show you a few holes. I didn't know I was just being used for, you know, punching bag, but he was a real nice guy, and showed me a couple moves, and then I got hooked on it. So we used to have the boxing ring from 7:30 until 9, and they had it from 9 until 10:30. So I used to wait around and got to know him, and I asked him, I said, hey, how do I get into wrestling? And he told me how, and I went over to wrestling school and stayed there for a while and picked up the trade and caught on. I guess they said I caught on pretty good, and Whipper Watson, you know, was a former world champion and all that, and he liked me and brought me down and put me on TV.
The first time I remember actually reading about you and your career is when you were in the feud with Jerry the King Lawler over in Memphis. Was that kind of like the big jump in your career?
No, it wasn't, because it did in itself. But I was in Texas at the time, and the thing with Jerry Lawler all started. You remember when Ollie fought Inoki?
Yes.
Well, Lawler got the same idea, and he knew I had a boxing background. I sparred with Ollie, George Foreman, all those guys. And he got in touch with me to come in. He said, we got this idea. I go, well, what's the idea? He goes, you know, boxer versus wrestler. I said, okay. And we went in, but we built it up right. I went in 5 Wednesdays for TV. Then we had the big mass boxer versus wrestler. It sold out, and then he had called me from Texas and wanted me to come in. So I said, okay, but, you know, you got to make it worth my while. We worked out a deal, and I went in, and then I beat Lawler for it. I was the first American or African-Canadian, whatever you want to call me, to win the Southern title. So we really pushed on that, and I worked the whole program with him for like 9 months.
How did you deal? Because, I mean, the wrestling world has changed. The regular world has changed, but you becoming famous as a black man during times where racism was rampant. Not that it's not rampant today, but it's just...
But it's more hidden today.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm going to bring that up. When I went in and I won the title, and you know, I couldn't stay in different hotels. I'd go in and ask for a room. They say they were full. I knew they weren't. And I had a van at the time, so I slept in the van and all that. But I never was mad or upset. I knew I could get better, and I knew. And I just talked to Jared yesterday, and he said I was kind of the one that did the crossover, where not only the blacks liked me, but the whites started to. And then that's when I became I went all through the South, and I'm not bragging or blowing my own horn, but I was the first black Southern champion. I was the first black Georgia champion, first black Texas champion, first black Florida champion. It's all in my book. It goes around. But I had that determination, you know.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And I wasn't going to get mad, and I wasn't going to get upset, because I figured at that point I was just defeating myself. I knew I could. And I said, someday I'm going to be world champion. Took me almost 20 years, but I did become world champion. But that was very, very hard in those days. But I found the blacks were more bitter than the whites. And I say that, not no disrespect to anybody. I say that to the fact that everybody I talk to, they're going, well, your grandfather had my grandfather a slave. You know, I walked on my toes. I walked frontwards. I didn't walk on my heels to walk backwards. And I would tell them, you got to let all that go. That's 100 years ago. So that was my philosophy.
Was it a difficult time? Because, like, as you said, you were able to break those barriers. In the territory system at that time, especially the late 70s, early 80s, when they would only have, like, one black wrestler on the roster, they would only push one black wrestler at that time. So was there kind of those incidents with racism going into a territory where there was already a black superstar on the roster?
Well, because what it was in those days, and you know, Tommy Dreamer, you know as well as I know that in those days, if you went to Texas, you had to have a Mexican because you had a population. If you went to the South, you had to have a black wrestler. If you went up here, you know, and there wasn't that many in the business at that time that were, I would consider, top main event workers. I'm not saying I was the best. I'm not saying, but I was in the right place probably at the right time because I worked hard. Now, when I went into Tennessee, we had three black wrestlers in there. I'm not going to name them because I don't want to put them down or anything. But they did the things like eating watermelon on TV and coming out and getting whipped. And I said, no, this is not me. I came in as an athlete, and I'm going to leave as one. And they respected that.
Wow. I didn't know about that. That's amazing. I remember Tar and Feathering. That was a racist thing.
Oh, yeah. They lost their TV. They took Burrhead Jones.
Yep.
And put him on TV, and they poured molasses on him. Then they cut a pillow and put feathers on him. And then the guy come in with a lighter, like he was going to send him a tar and feather.
Wow.
And I said, no, I'm in the wrong place. So they never ever, they treated me with respect. I got respect because I gave respect back.
Well, you also earned it. I mean, being a phenomenal worker.
I earned it, and I worked for it. And if I had a problem, I didn't sit in the dressing room and tell anybody. I went right to the promoter. At that time, it was Nick Gulas and Jared. I was there when he made the split. And I told him, this is the problem, I'm leaving. No, what's the matter? And I would speak up. But the other guys I found, they were, they wouldn't speak up. They wouldn't say anything. They were content. And I said, you guys, you're not going to go no place. And you know, realize people are laughing at you. And that's why you're getting treated this way.
You know, you were an amazing singles wrestler, but a lot of people remember you as a tag team wrestler, and they probably remember your years in the WWF when you tag team with Tony Atlas. But you tagged with everybody, like you said, from Georgia to Continental Wrestling, all over the NWA, Pacific Northwest. Was there a favorite tag team partner of yours?
I think Jerry Briscoe was one of the ones that was. Dusty and him, but there was a reason behind that you really don't know, because when you come into a territory, I came into the Florida when Buddy Colt had that plane accident and the territory had dropped, and they had Dusty Rhodes as the big star. God bless him. He's a friend of mine. I loved him to death, but they weren't drawing nothing. So here I came in, Jim Barnett sent me in, and I'm not saying it again that I had the big hit or anything, but I came in with a style they never seen. I came in with the boxing, the jabbing, the kip-ups, the drop kicks, and then right away, he became my partner, you know?
That's
not that
awesome.
I asked for him, But, you know, and then everything, the interview was me and the Rocker. And I never met him until I came in here. But I understood that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, because of your talent. I wish half the baby faces today had the fire that you have in your career, because I think that's a lot what's missing in today's wrestling. And people get behind that. People got behind your comeback. People got behind everything that you did.
Right now, there's no comeback. You don't know who's a heel, who's a babyface. One guy's going 6 feet in the air. The other guy's going 8 feet. The other guy's 10 for no rhyme or for no reason. And I helped open the first SmackDown Wrestling Academy in Davie for WWE. And I would say to those guys, why did you do that move? Oh, well, because I knew how to do it. They just didn't know how to place it together like a jigsaw puzzle, you know. And I think a lot of them today work hard. They want to get over, but they don't have the psychology, because you cannot teach psychology. I can take a 5-year-old kid. I can teach him arm drags. I can teach him headlocks. I can teach him anything. But you've got to have psychology. I used to sit at night and think about what I could do next, what I got to do next. I'll give you an example if you got a minute.
Of course.
I went to L.A., and I watched these Mexican wrestlers at 160 pounds doing backflips on the top rope. And I weigh 250, 260. I said, I know I can do that. So I go to the YMCA. I get on a diving board. I put pants on the shirt. I kept doing backflips, landing on my face, landing on my stomach, until I finally learned how to land on my feet. And then when I went into the auditorium in L.A. and did that, people thought I was from outer space. They never seen anybody 250 pounds that could do that. But it all comes from hard work, determination, this business, everybody's complaining, well, I shouldn't be doing this, I should be on main event. I think you have to earn it, and you have to work your way up.
Is there a moment in your career that you're most proud of?
Yes, one. And you will not believe this, and I will take this to my grave with me. Of all the guys in this business, how many can say one of my last matches was with my son before he ever became famous? Rocky and the Rock Johnson. We wrestled a tag team in Bahamas.
That's awesome. I mean, because Tommy, you know, in the sports world, everybody talks about the Manning family and, you know, how Archie Manning with his son, two sons, being able to move on to the NFL and win Super Bowls. It's the same thing with you, Rocky. I mean, to become a champion and then watch your son become the biggest star in the company and become a champion, future Hall of Famer. I mean, you got to be very proud of that.
Oh, I'm proud. I have two other children. I have a son and a daughter. When I was young, Wanda and Curtis, and I'm proud of them too. But they were in a different field. Dwayne, when he had come home from playing football, and he said, "Dad, I want you to train me in wrestling." I did everything in my power to discourage him, because I didn't want him going through what I went through. But now he'll say my dad was a pioneer. I didn't want him going through all the prejudice, all this and all that. I said, okay, I'm going to train you, but I'm going to train you 150%.
So if he's the Rock, sorry.
Right. And I trained him hard, and I was probably harder on him than I would have been on somebody that I trained that I didn't really know.
Well, that's because it's your boy and you love him.
I wanted to bring the best out of him. And I'll give you an example. He was clowning around one day at the gym, and we were training, and I said, look. And he got a little sassy. I said, look, if you want sympathy, go home to your mother and get it. So he goes, that's exactly where I'm going. He walked a mile and a half home in the rain. He went home, told his mother, Dad's trying to kill me. She wouldn't speak to me for a week. He wouldn't speak to me for about a week and a half, but I didn't say anything to him. When he got ready, he said, Dad, can I talk to you? I said, sure. We sat down and we talked. He apologized. I said, now, this is the wrestling business. Do you just want to be a curtain jerker, which means you want to be in the first match, you want to be middle, or do you want to be a champion? I believe everybody's has championship material in them. You just got to learn how to bring it out.
I was trained by Johnny Rods, and he used to stretch me.
Oh, I worked with Johnny Rods 100 times. Good friend of mine.
And he used to stretch me.
You know the story. You have to respect this business. You have to train. And what you put in is what you're going to get out.
Absolutely. And I was going to say.
A lot of wrestlers are content. The black boots, the black tights, and first match. And they can go tell everybody I'm a wrestler. and could care less. You know, I lived it, and this was my living. This was my dream. And I was like Martin Luther King. I had that dream that I knew someday I was going on top of that mountain.
And you did. And if I was just going to say, if your son is the rock, you're the mountain, because you're the man who gave us the foundation.
He said, Dad, I don't know if I could go what you went through, because I know what you went through, and you were a pioneer, and I paved the road. And thank God he's never forgotten it. And that's why he's so great and he's so humble today.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of his. I love his show Ballers on HBO. And there was an episode a couple of seasons ago that he wore a Rocky Johnson shirt, Soul Man Rocky Johnson. How the hell did I get a hold of that shirt? Like, as soon as I saw the episode, I'm Googling it. I mean, how do I find that? Could you ask him to give me that shirt?
I need that shirt. I got a whole garage full. I'll give you my address. I mean, send me your, when I get off the phone, I'll give you to my wife. Give me your address and I'll send them to you. I got a whole garage full of Rocky Soul Man Johnson shirts out here.
Do you have like a website where you could buy them?
No, but you know, the way everybody's asking, I'm going to send you a couple, but the way everybody's asking, I should set up one.
I'll tell you what, I'll sell them for you.
T-shirt and a book.
You know what? That sounds like a deal. When we get through with this conversation, you have my phone number. You can call me and we'll talk with my wife and we can work them out.
I can get the
shirts anytime. I can get them made up anytime I want.
I love it. What was it like going into the Hall of Fame for you? I mean, you know, you were everywhere, like we talked about, in Memphis, in Georgia, in Texas. But what was it like for you? You know, it's been a decade now going into the WWE Hall of Fame.
It was great. And then, when you go into the Hall of Fame, that's your last hurrah. But, you know, it was great that you get recognized as a Hall of Famer. I never considered myself a Hall of Famer. I never got in this business to be a Hall of Famer, but it was great. But it took me around the world. I walked in the pyramids of Egypt. I've wrestled in England. I've wrestled in France. I've wrestled in Arabia. I've wrestled all over. It took me all around the world. But, you know, when you're standing up there, it's an emotional, because it's your last speech, and you know the next time, like I said, the next time you see me, it'll be a TV tape. You know, because, you know, this is it. But I was very happy, very proud. Still have my ring. Still have my plaque that I plan on passing down to generations. And the good thing is about it, my first pair of boots, when I wasn't making any money, I finally got them bronze. So I'm going to leave those. And maybe 100 years from now, they can say, well, this was my great-great-great-grandfather's boots.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.